Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, it's Tuesday the 20th of August. I'm Jules Breach, he's Andy Brassel, and this is Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily.
To get hat-trick wherever, it's the best thing as a striker, so I can be... I'm really, really happy about it, yeah.
It was never on a winner going to Macclesfield Town, especially with their circumstances off the field. To keep them up was pretty much a minor miracle.
I looked at that yesterday, and you looked at Leicester and looked at Chelsea, and you think, Leicester will finish above Chelsea.
It's another Tuesday. How's your week been?
Pretty good. Restart of football in Spain and Germany, and Lyon absolutely flying in France. Less we talk about AFC Wimbledon, the better, which is good. Although, you know, 1 point on the board, can't argue with that.
You've had a very sophisticated children's lunch today of fish and chips and your selection of mushy peas, which I...
Fish fingers. And chips.
Wow, that's even more of a kid's dinner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes it's necessary though,
isn't
it? Sometimes
you just got to scratch that itch.
You got to do it.
How was your weekend?
Good, busy, all the football. Basically just sat at home and watched football all day Sunday, didn't get dressed.
And you cooked a paella?
Cooked a paella. As well. Oh, you said it the Spanish way and everything. Paella.
Yeah.
Fancy.
Well, I'm not fancy. I ate fish fingers for lunch. Come on.
I love a bit of chorizo. I filled up that paella bowl with chorizo. It was delicious. Let's talk about football because Frank Lampard, it's not been the best start for life as Chelsea boss for Frank.
It's been fish fingers rather than paella so far.
It has, hasn't it? And yeah. 1-1 draw on Sunday at Stamford Bridge in his first home game against Leicester City. And really, Leicester probably should have won the game.
Yeah, and I think in terms of the results, it's not been fantastic so far. There's been enough in those two games that suggests he's got something. He's got something to work with. He's got people on side and pulling in his direction. I mean, you're right about Leicester should have won the game, but I felt that it was like watching, I don't know, Juventus at their best or something like that. That last 20 minutes, they just absolutely were relentless, just tore at Chelsea. And Chelsea weren't able to cope with that. Now, after the way they faded at Old Trafford in the first game, that's the concern, isn't it? You know, you can talk about basic mistakes and I think they'll look at conceding the goal like they did to Ndidi at the set piece, but that's really their main issue. And with a nascent team that's still coming together and a young coach who, very much like Andre Villas-Boas, and I hope for Chelsea fans' sake he doesn't turn out like Andre Villas-Boas did at Stamford Bridge. I think if people are honest with themselves, they'll know that Frank Lampard got this job a little bit too early. That doesn't mean that it can't work out, like it didn't work out for Villas-Boas. But I think that has to be something we bear in mind every little judgment we make on Chelsea, even at this early stage during the season. And in one sense, the fact that, I mean, Henry Winter, when he wrote about it in the Times, you know, he writes a tremendous match report. He wrote about it quite evocatively about how there was a real swell of, I don't know if nostalgia is the quite word, quite the right word, but a real swell of support for Frank Lampard, and the sense that that will keep trouble at arm's length. That will give him room to work for the moment. And I really hope that's the case.
There's been a lot to be impressed by, though, so far with Chelsea, I think, because despite the fact they haven't got the results, I do think the performances in spells have been better than I was expecting. Mm. That high press, for the first 10, 15 minutes against Leicester, Chelsea could have been 3 or 4 nil up had they been more clinical in front of goal. And I don't know whether that style of football can be sustained for a full 90 minutes. Clearly it can't so far based on what we've seen. But there are positives that I can see in what Frank is doing and the style of football he's looking for. It's just whether or not it's too much too soon for the players.
I wonder if that says something about his experience or lack thereof at the top level, because you look at other teams who might play in that way or attempt to play in that way. I think you look especially at, say, Dortmund, maybe to a lesser extent Liverpool. They've got a way of giving themselves a breather in game. Everyone knows you can't play like that for 90 minutes. So you've got to work out when is the point where you step off, you drop a little bit, and maybe even like keeping possession is your way of saving energy, depending on what sort of players you have and what sort of team you have. You know, that's something we saw with, I don't know, the Spain sides of 2010 and most of the way through Euro 2012 up until the final where they went crazy against Italy. That idea of keeping the ball as containment and saving energy. No, they never looked like they were really doing that much with it, but sometimes you have to take a breather. I don't know if that's something we can specifically pin on Frank Lampard or if we look at English football more widely, because it's something that the national team have definitely had an issue with. I mean, I think we can look back to the Roy Hodgson era, and, you know, I remember going to see England play, yeah, it must have been Slovakia at St Etienne in the third group game in Euro 2016. And it sounds ridiculous to say for a 0-0 draw, but, you know, if you talk about the game rather than the result, which sometimes we're not great at as a culture, are we? England were terrific for the first 50, 60 minutes. And then when they couldn't score, they just ran out of ideas, ran out of energy, and that was it. And even though England had made really positive steps under Gareth Southgate, that not being able to sustain physical effort, like, you know, blowing all your chips too early, is something that's been an issue for them. So that, to me, suggests it's beyond a particular coach or a particular methodology, but more ingrained in our culture.
I agree. And I think it's something that Frank clearly has to work on with the team, because ultimately in those first few minutes of the game against Leicester, they had chances and they just weren't clinical enough in front of goal. And
yeah,
and whether that's not having
Hazard.
Obviously, they're missing Hazard. They're missing that match winner. I think Giroud is highly underrated. The way he lays the ball off for whoever else he's playing alongside or who's playing just behind him is at times exceptional. And unfortunately, he didn't have the right person with him at times in this game to finish those chances off. We saw in the Super Cup that when he has a chance in front of goal and he's able to take it, he can also score goals. So I was pleased to see Giroud start ahead of Tammy Abraham on Sunday. But is it enough? Do Chelsea have enough up front to be able to play this style of football? Because they're so vulnerable on the counter-attack if they're playing that high-press style of a game.
Yeah, they are. And it puts a lot of pressure on N'Golo Kante, doesn't it? To be his absolute best for, well, a lot of this season. You know, possibly up to 60 games, depending on how far they get in cup competitions. I mean, you know, there are going to be times, I think, especially if, as they seem to want to do, via Abraham, via Mason Mount, to really commit to developing their own players, and not just developing their own players to sell, but developing their own players for their first team, which is something that Chelsea haven't really done.
Mason Mount was exceptional in the game.
He was terrific. Again,
he was their best player for me.
For the first
aside
hour.
From Kante.
Yeah. Again, for the first hour, he was brilliant. Maybe again, saving energy comes as part of what the team do. Maybe it comes as part of his personal experience. But yeah, he was terrific, really brave. And again, the environment is set for him to flourish because that click between Lampard and the crowd, I think, is very, very important. It's something like the atmosphere last season at Stamford Bridge was pretty poisonous for long spells.
Very negative, wasn't it?
Yeah, and like, even when the results weren't that bad, and you know, they ended up doing okay out of the season. If you imagine Lampard repeating statistically the season that Sarri's just had, I mean, he would be praised to the hills, mm-hmm. and quite rightly in the circumstances. But I think, you know, it was probably the most negative atmosphere that there had been between team and crowd since the Rafa Benitez days. Really, it was pretty bad. Now they've moved on from that, and there is that sense of freedom, that sense of, yeah, I guess, a free hit this season because of the situation that they find themselves in. But I think that situation is absolutely perfect for Mason Mount. You know, ideologically, the crowd are ready for him. The club, the team is ready for him. And, you know, it's a great situation for him to be able to build his Premier League career.
A couple of my mates were at the game at Stamford Bridge, mm. and talking about the atmosphere there and whether they're backing Frank, they said that in the second half, they could feel around them that there was a sense of restlessness because the game ran away from them. And as we've already discussed, Leicester probably should have won the game.
Do you think that's just something that they need to get used to compared to like diminished circumstances rather than necessarily dissatisfaction with what Frank Lampard's doing?
Yeah. And I think that in comparison to if, say, for example, Maurizio Sarri was still in charge and they'd got three games into the season without a win, including that the Super Cup.
Yeah.
There would have been boos. Mm. Going into the final few minutes of the game, up against it, after being 1-0 up for the majority of the game, and you know, then coming away where you could have potentially lost it, there would have been boos if Sarri was still in charge, you'd imagine. So there is this sense that because Lampard is a club legend, he will be given more time. Obviously, the transfer ban helps that in a way. It helps steady the ship, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it makes it clear what you've got to work with. There's no doubt. There's total stability. But yes, it's going to take time. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And you know, that's fine because he's still learning as well. I mean, it's the perfect environment for him. I mean, any other season, you'd be thinking like he's got to fight on to save his job because we can understand his history with the club, but it's Chelsea, and Chelsea have really high standards. Their stability is further up in the club. It's not the coach. You know, you can compare them in a certain way to the way a lot of modern European clubs work. Say, you know, you look at Bayern, and their stability is Hoeneß and Rummenigge, and for a while some years back it was Beckenbauer. It's never been the coach. The coach is just another employee. But I think really this situation that they're in sort of lends itself quite nicely on all sides, because say if they had been in a different situation, say if they had have been able to go and buy players, and say if Frank Lampard had been in charge then, say if he bought some players, it didn't really gel. They were, I don't know, 8th in February and out of Europe and it didn't work and they fired him. Is there a real backlash from the fans just because Frank Lampard being who he is? If he'd not have been given that time, which he will undoubtedly be given. I know this is a hypothetical, but stay with me here.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's something that it almost forces the club to be a little less trigger happy than they might be in a parallel situation, in a normal situation.
Which is good because we don't want to see managers being sacked left, right and centre when it hasn't worked.
Well, the Premier League has really gone that way.
It has.
Because the stakes have become higher and higher and higher. I mean, we've had a lot of teams have three manager seasons in the last little while. And, you know, when you get to a point, and we've seen it, of course, there was a change of ownership there, but when Swansea went through three in a season, and you're thinking, oh, this is bad. You know, Swansea are a club, along with Southampton until, again, there were quite profound changes there, that you think this is a club for most of the time in the Premier League, that they were in the Premier League. Swansea had a very, very definite identity. So for them to get to a point where they panic, that's, yeah, things are really changing this league.
It will be really interesting to see whether the board listen to the Chelsea fans if, for example, things don't go to plan and they actually go downhill and Frank hasn't got the results that the fans are looking for. And
are we talking bottom six?
I'm talking really bad, yeah. Bottom six in the table and the fans want him out, but the board want to give him time. It'll be interesting to see whether they listen to the fans or whether this ultimate... Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I'm interested to see how bad it would have to get in terms of results. We're not talking
for
about...
For the fans to turn.
Exactly, because in terms of the content, as you say in the games, we could easily be sitting here talking about them with 6 points and a UEFA Super Cup. I mean, it's not a massive leap, is it, from what they've produced to those results? It sounds weird when you see it written down, what's actually happened. But, you know, they weren't a million miles away in any of those. I think, as well as a side to this, we have to say, talking of managers and experience, what a good job Brendan Rodgers is doing at Leicester already. They look formidable. I mean, we touched in, didn't we, last week on those teams that could be popping towards sixth. And they're in the mix. They're in the mix.
And that's a great point for Leicester at Stamford Bridge this early in the season.
It is. But because they were so good in that closing part,
I thought,
I did find myself thinking as well, with the exceptional situation that Chelsea are in, yeah, you know, it's a great point at Stamford Bridge. In 3 months' time, will they still think it's a great point? Mm. Or will they think there's a couple of points we let go? Obviously, so much of that will be conditioned by the results Chelsea have from here on in. And I think the fact that they go away to Norwich next and they're home to Sheffield United next...
These are some good fixtures where Chelsea should be winning.
Well, that's the thing. All of a sudden, this is a point where there is pressure on. If they don't get points from these, or they just get like 1 or 2 points from those... then maybe there's a different angle to this conversation that we're having at the moment.
However, away at Norwich next, we saw how well Norwich played at home this weekend.
Yeah.
And the fact that Daniel Farke is going to keep to that style of football and they're going to score goals. Chelsea's defence don't look the strongest in the league right now. It's not going to be a dead set win for Chelsea.
I would be sprinkling essence of horse placenta on Antonio Rüdiger's cornflakes at the moment. There's no other way. There's no other way.
He's got to play, hasn't he? He's got to come back.
Yeah, he's got to.
Another thing I found interesting about Lampard as Chelsea boss compared to Sarri is the fans haven't been getting on his back for playing Kante in the role he's in this season, whereas last year it was all they were talking about with Sarri and they were so negative about it. But now Lampard's doing it. Oh, it's all fine.
Yeah. I think the perception was because... Jorginho is so much Sarri's on-pitch muse that he'd been shifted to suit Jorginho. I think that was the issue. And, you know, it's a self-perpetuating thing, isn't it? Because Sarri's getting stick for...
Everything.
Apparently, yeah, for everything, but apparently shifting their best player for his boy. Jorginho's getting stick for struggling with the demands of the Premier League. And let's face it, he's not the first player to have found it a bit difficult in his first season. Better players and worse players than him have found it that difficult and more difficult in their first season in the Premier League. I mean, I think Sarri got some unreasonable stick because of Jorginho. And Jorginho got some unreasonable stick because of Sarri. I'm really interested to see how this season pans out for Jorginho now that the coach that he was seen as being totally synonymous with is not there.
Well, he's getting game time and he's playing in the role he wants to play in. Kante is playing further up the pitch. So we'll have to see how it all pans out, as you say. But the fans clearly are giving Lampard a little bit of leeway there with that decision.
Kante's going to end up as their top scorer. Like, basically...
Do you reckon?
Beckers can't
even
be choosers.
Even after missing that shot against Leicester, he should have scored that.
The practice makes perfect. I mean, look, they're not full of goals this season. I mean, you wonder the other players who are marginalised... who have been marginalised, who are maybe going to get a go. I mean, Michy Batshuayi at some point. you know, they can't rule anything out at the moment, can they?
They can't. We've got an email here from Neil Biggerstaff. Thanks for all of these. Remember, you can email Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com to get in touch. He said, I'm loving the new pod additions to the squad. Keeps me up to date with what's going on. And Andy, you did pronounce Kelowna correctly last
week.
Yes. Do you even remember how you said it?
Not really.
Have I said it right?
I think so.
Great.
I had a few people get in touch saying you pronounced it right.
Hey.
I think I just closed my eyes and hoped for the best.
Yeah, that's what I just did. I'm listening to you from Abbotsford, British Columbia, Canada. And he said, where do you think Chelsea will finish at the end of the season? And if it is outside the top 10, is that a failure? But if we finish top five, is that a great season? Top five, phenomenal season, I think, for Chelsea.
I think it is. I also think it's the content rather than the result. I'm saying that because I've been watching the Leeds United documentary on Amazon with Marcelo Bielsa, and the whole time you're watching a Bielsa team, you're thinking, football's not about the results. Who cares?
Of course it's about the results. Don't give me that. Don't give me that. You're fuming that Wimbledon didn't win at the weekend.
Yeah, fair enough.
What do you think? So top five, I think that's a great season for Chelsea, considering the circumstances, the transfer ban, their best player leaving. Frank Lampard in a role as manager that some people are saying is too soon. I think finishing top five would be a good season, especially now that I've seen how the other teams that should finish in the top six have been playing. I think Arsenal have been brilliant. So I think if Chelsea finish top five, that for me would mean they're finishing just below Chelsea, because I think Arsenal will get top four.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think you look at Chelsea, I think we might come back to this Chelsea-Leicester game on a few occasions, because I think that Chelsea, Leicester, Wolves, maybe even Watford, as we got it together. See, I do
Watford.
Read them out. I read the mail we get. We had someone complaining that Watford weren't in the mix there. Sorry, I don't have your
Come
name to hand.
On.
It's not all about the results, Jules, remember? No, but Chelsea are competing in a different region of the Premier League this year. I think that's the point. I mean, going back to Neil's email, if they finish outside the top 10, well, it's not ideal, clearly, but it depends on where the team actually is, where some of those players who are going to see them through subsequent seasons actually are. I think that's the upshot of this season, rather than, I don't want to put a place on, they need to finish fourth, they need to finish fifth, they need to finish in the top eight. I don't really think that is the be-all and end-all of this season. And I think, you know, you're talking about your friends at Chelsea having a bit of unrest around them. I think that's normal at this point in the season. I think that'll settle. I think it will get better rather than worse in terms of the fans' grasp of what this season is about and the team's grasp of what this season is about, unless it gets really, really, really bad.
Also, Neil, I do think it depends on how you describe failure as well. What's your kind of margins of what is failure and what is success? So thanks for your email, Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com, if you want to get in touch for next week. Time for a break. After this, we're going to be talking about the Championship players that have made the step up to the Premier League.
Hey, I'm confident I can keep going, do well in the Premier League, and we as a team, we believe we can do it, and I'm 100% sure those guys will still find me in the box, and I hope I can keep scoring goals.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
So I know you love talking about a bit of championship, Jules. Unfortunately enough, Timo Pukki has just made the Premier League his playground in the space of two games. That hat-trick at the weekend.
Sublime.
Four Premier League goals in two games. And they were really good goals.
He's a joint top scorer in the league. No one expected this after two matches.
No. And haven't seen
Not him, even him, probably.
Haven't seen him play in Germany and then disappear into the ether through a not especially successful spell in Scotland and then go off to Denmark. I never imagined this. And I don't watch very much championship anymore. You see, it has to give somewhere. You can't watch every single league. And so I was surprised to see that, hang about, this guy's got 29 goals in the championship last year. I thought that was achievement enough, but I did think that was the end of it. I mean, they've been having this interesting discussion in France recently about how the top scorer in Ligue 2 never quite gets it going in Ligue 1. And the top scorer in Ligue 2 last season, Gaëtan Charbonnier, who plays for Brest, missed a penalty in the first game. So Everyone's, it's the curse.
It's the curse.
It's the curse. But then Timo Pukki is like, okay, hold my beer, check this out.
Exactly.
Incredible.
He's there with a cigar in his mouth, isn't he, every week?
Yeah.
A lot of it is down to the style of football Norwich play. Daniel Farker and the way he sets his team up means they are going to score goals. And Timo Pukki every single week will have these chances. And he is a clinical, efficient goal scorer. If he gets those chances, he puts them away. I love the way he plays. He's so confident in front of goal. He's not worried about this is the Premier League. He just wants to score goals and help his team win.
Yeah, I think it was interesting seeing him being interviewed by Gary Lineker on Match of the Day, where he said, well, yeah, this is probably one of the greatest moments of my career. And then you could see the cogs ticking around in his brain. It's like, well, it was only a hat-trick in the second game. Should I really be saying that? And I was thinking, go for it. Just go for it. Say that.
That step up from the championship, it's been a challenge over the years for many players.
Yeah, well, you know what, Jules? If you're Che Adams, having just arrived at Southampton after a very good season in the Champo with Birmingham, you get home after missing that sitter. Let's not skirt around it, against Liverpool. And, you know, the chance to make a name for yourself by scoring against Liverpool, you're not really going to get a better chance. You come home, turn the telly on and watch Timo Pukki making it look like it's easy.
Yeah, that's tough. It must be tough for the players that have come up from the championship from last season who are watching on and seeing how well Pukki and some of the other players have adapted to the Premier League. And as a striker, you're judged on the amount of goals you score. Last season for Birmingham, Che got 22 goals and 5 assists. He's yet to get on the score sheet this season. And it's all about getting that first goal, isn't it? Then you can relax. Right, I've got one in the Premier League now. Now I can carry on. It's too soon to judge Che Adams and say whether he can or cannot make the step up. But so far, it's not been the best watch.
Yeah, well, I don't know what people expect, because Southampton paid, what, 15 million for him? I mean, how many Premier League goals do you expect for that amount of money these days?
If you're a Southampton fan, a lot. Want a lot.
I think if you're getting 10, you're doing all right. And, you know, it is only the start of the season. He is only just adapting. And we've got to bear in mind that Southampton are entering a new phase under Ralf Hasenhüttl. This is the first time he's had a pre-season with the team. This is the first time he's got to start making it his own, not with a limitless budget.
I like him as well.
Yeah, I like him a lot, but he did a phenomenal job getting them away from the bottom three last season. I don't think that's something we can emphasise enough. And, you know, it is going to take time to, and we were talking about Wimbledon before, I think after Wally Downs got the team away from the bottom last season, and, you know, the form in the last 2 months of the season was kind of promotion form, really, to get us into that position. But then you've got to start all over again. That's very, very difficult. And that's the sort of thing that Southampton are doing this season, because the last thing they want is a repeat of that relegation struggle. But doing that with a young player, and all of a sudden it's like, right, okay, you've got to help us, steer us away from that scenario. And you're straight in there with a big game against the European champions after the knock their confidence must have taken after losing at Burnley last week. I mean, there's no way they deserve to lose that game 3-0, but that's what happened. It looks hideous on paper. And then you've got to welcome Liverpool. And, you know, for parts of that, I thought Southampton did pretty well. They created a lot, and, you know, they almost snatched something at the end thanks to a few little gremlins at the back for Liverpool.
I think that'll be the most disappointing thing for Southampton, is that they didn't come away with a point from that match, because facing Liverpool at a time where their defence does look shaky, where they haven't got their first choice goalkeeper, where Adrian clearly gave away a terrible, terrible goal, that's the sort of game, especially like you say, they had chances, that I think Southampton will be disappointed they didn't come away with a point.
But I think that the difference between the situation that Che Adams is in and the difference and the situation that Timo Pukki's in, I think that those are two totally different situations. You feel the stability with Norwich. Norwich know what they're about. So I'm not saying that Norwich will finish higher than Southampton. I mean,
there's probably less pressure on Norwich, isn't there? Because they've just come up. So
that as well.
They just know they've got to go out there and play a good game. Most people have written them off to be relegated. So they just think, right, let's play football. Let's enjoy it. Let's play the style we want. Let's stick to our philosophy and enjoy it while we're here. Whereas for Southampton, they've been in the Premier League for a number of years now. They struggled last year. They don't want to have another year like that. With Ralph Hasenhüttl, as you say, in his first full season, they're expecting a bit more, and they don't want to be in another relegation battle come the end of the year.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think of those promoted teams, though, there's, going back to the promoted teams, we talked about them last week. I do think there's pressure on Villa to get it right because of the amount of money they've spent and because of the dimensions of the club. I mean, they're an enormous club. You know, you're talking about European Cup winners. They're still remembered across Europe and across the world for being European Cup winners. And
were they bit unlucky? Tom Heaton giving away that penalty was a bit sloppy.
I don't think that's unlucky. I just think that's poor play. You know, you expect your experienced players to come through for you, and, you know, they gave themselves an absolute mountain to climb, really. And from there on in, you know, We saw how it went. They need to get some points on the board pretty quickly, I think, to stop the rot setting in, especially as, like, their last couple of seasons in the Premier League were just awful. You know, they're in the same boat as Sunderland, where they probably should have gone like the season before they went down, or maybe even the season before that. And they just about managed to pull it out of the fire. But, you know, the pressure on them, because you heard it when, again, watching it on Match of the Day, and the first thing the commentator says, I think it was Conor McNamara, going, the Holt end is one of the great ends in English football. And it is. It really is. And, you know, you think that is some weight to carry. On the other hand, John McGinn, who, having said, as I did before, that I don't really get that much of an opportunity to see much of the Championship these days, haven't really seen that much of at club level.
I'm a big fan.
And he looks special. He looks really, really special. So when we're talking about players making the step up from the Championship, I mean, he's one of those guys who's made it look easy.
Sol could probably do a book on what's happened in the last year as being a manager.
Andy, we talked about Lampard at the top of the show. There are a lot of other managers in the same mould right now that are players turned managers.
Of a certain generation.
Of a certain generation that all have differing views, differing fortunes. So I think it's worth the discussion on kind of where they're at right now. Let's talk Sol Campbell, because he walked away from Macclesfield last week, understandably, after not being paid for months. And you can completely understand why he's done that. He left amicably, but he's been given a tough time since his departure, hasn't he?
I find this quite difficult to get my head around. And unfortunately, I think so often we play what we believe to be a footballer or a coach's personality. And we don't know. We only know moments of them, don't we? And we piece together what we think they're like from that. I think even when, like you or I, we're in the media and we come into contact with people all the time, we come into contact with players and managers all the time, we know we're meeting them just for a brief moment on most occasions, and we're only seeing a snapshot of where they are at that point in their life, just as is the same with any person.
And vice versa.
In life. Absolutely, absolutely. And I think the perception of Sol Campbell as, you know,
the greatest manager of all time.
Well, I think that perception of him as someone who is a little bit full of themselves and not the easiest bloke to get along with is something that weighs quite heavily. I think there's a lot of confirmation bias in the way that people perceive him. The fact is, bottom line, he is a guy who went and got, I think it's not unfair to say, the worst job in league football, certainly at the time. This is a guy who wants to be a head coach so badly, who wants to make it work so badly. He went and took the worst job in the league and he made a success of it with very little resource. I think that's extraordinarily laudable. How many coaches or how many of his peers in his generation would have said, all right, I'll go and take on Macclesfield Town? I think the scope for you ending up with egg on your face and for people saying, what's he doing down there? Or look at the state of him. He can only get a job at Macclesfield Town. I think for him to take that on, to have that level of belief and to have that desire to get stuck in, them escaping relegation last season was a near miracle.
On the final day of the season as well. For those fans, they will remember that day for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely.
And they'll remember that Sol Campbell was their manager. And as you say, he was willing to take on that job, a job that looked almost destined for Macclesfield to fall out of the Football League and be relegated. For him to take that on and do as well as he did is something to be applauded, I think. And now that he's left, I think it's a real shame that some fans are, you know, not being particularly nice.
Well, what are you meant to do if you're not getting paid? I mean, is there an acceptable amount of...
Can you blame him?
Is there an acceptable amount of time not to be paid? I mean, we saw this, didn't we, in an extraordinary way. Following up, we were talking about Berry and Bolton the other week. And, you know, you had the owner of Berry, Steve Dale, who, well, there aren't any words, really, on TalkSport last week, rowing with one of his players because he was proudly trumpeting that he paid him 50% of his pay last month, having not paid him for months, as if, like, how dare you come on and complain about your circumstances when you've been
incredible.
Given, like, 1/16th of what you're legally entitled to.
And what you're owed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it takes something like that to put it into perspective for a player to say, actually, I'm on the brink of losing everything. Me and my family are in a spot. You know, we're going to get thrown out of our house. You know, that's disruptive in every way, obviously, anyway, even if you're a single person. But he was a guy with a family, with kids at school and all the rest of it. It's very difficult for us sometimes to think of footballers like that. You know, we think of them all living in mansions in Essex or whatever, even if they're playing for Bury. But, you know, it's not like that. And, it's something that, is something that we want our clubs to survive no matter what, of course, but there comes a point where it's just too much. And, you know, a player, whether it's, or a coach, whether it be someone like Sol Campbell, who's done very well out of his career, or whether it be someone who's living hand to mouth, like the Berry player, excuse me, I can't remember their name, who was on TalkSport telling his owner what he was going through, there comes a point where you're like, you know, I signed a contract. I'm entitled to this money. I deserve to be paid. I'm not putting up with this anymore.
It's interesting to see as well the different reactions and the different kind of levels of allowance that and leeway that players turned managers get, because there are so many of them in this kind of era now, aren't there? To name a few, we've obviously got Scott Parker, who went down with Fulham, but that was accepted because of the circumstances in which he took over the club. They were set for relegation already. So I don't think anyone expected him to keep them up. If he did, then it would have been a miracle. But how long will he get this season?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is the perception of what they're like as a person, isn't it?
It's similar with Jonathan Woodgate at Middlesbrough. Mm. This is his first managerial role. He obviously is a Borough boy, so do the fans give him a bit more leeway because of that?
Yeah, and I think
they haven't won yet. They haven't won a game yet this season.
But I think because of what went before, I think most Borough fans realise it's a year zero. You know, there's dissatisfaction with the football. And you know, since they've left the Premier League, Middlesbrough have found it very, very difficult to fill the stadium. And when you bear in mind, you know, when I was in my teens and early 20s, it was always full. And you know, they're a Premier League perennial, even through those crazy years of, you know, Ravanelli and Brian Robson and Emerson and Janino Palisa and all those. But you've got the inside track on this, haven't you?
Well, my dad's a Middlesbrough fan. My family are from Middlesbrough, and my dad has supported them since he's a kid. And you're probably wondering how on earth I'm a Brighton fan then. It's because my dad moved down to Brighton when he was 18. But through and through, he's a Borough boy and has supported them his whole life. And I asked him, I said, Dad, how are you feeling about what's happening at Middlesbrough right now? He was a Pulis out. He didn't like the style of football last year. So he said to me, as long as we see attacking good football this year, that's important. And they're almost seeing this, he said, him and his friends that are Borough fans, they're seeing this as a transitional season. They're allowing that with Woodgate. But he did say that there does also come a point where he needs to get wins. Otherwise, he's worried that he might not get a whole season.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose this is...
It's a results-based business, Andy, as we were saying earlier. It is about the results.
This is Lampard without the transfer ban. Basically, isn't it? But, you know, I mean, Jonathan Woodgate is not just someone who played for the club. He is a local lad, and I think that matters. Interestingly, a friend of mine grew up on a parallel street to Jonathan Woodgate.
Wow.
And he said that when Woodgate came home from Real Madrid for his first winter break, he turned up at his mum and dad's house in an old banger, completely stuffed with bags of dirty washing, like he was coming home from university.
That is excellent.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Footballers, they don't know how to wash their own clothes, Andy. Well, if you're going to give them a bad name.
if you're at Real Madrid, I mean, you know, what happens? I mean, Santi Solari goes, do you want to come out for dinner tonight? And you go, no,
I've got my washing to do. Well, we hope that Middlesbrough pick up. Well, I'm sure my dad will be hoping that Middlesbrough pick up some points this weekend. Andy, it's been a pleasure as always. See you next Tuesday.
Look forward to it.
Are we allowed to say that on this show?
Yeah, we're allowed to say that.
See you next Tuesday.
Kids lunch. I had fish fingers and chips for lunch.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
On a Monday?
Sometimes.
Friday dinner?
Sometimes you've got to have a kid's lunch, don't
you? This was a Stakhanov production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.